This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Wrestling, welcome to a special episode number 25 of NWA Crock and Roll. I am your host, Sean Kidd, and we are finally back to our timeline watch, and we are doing tonight December 1985, part one. We're going to cover December 7th through December 21st and some of the happenings that happened there, coming right out of Starrcade. So if you remember our last timeline watch, all the way back in March of this year, we stopped at Starrcade 85, then the cock did its thing and we were waiting for it to come back up, but we are officially back tonight and I'm super excited. I am here with two co-hosts tonight. We'll talk about what happened with our fourth co-host tonight. But before we get to that, Dr. G, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. We should have the Welcome Back Cotter song playing now. We're back now. You know, this is awesome. Back to the timeline. And things are heating up in Crockett, and this is the timeline and period of time where, boy, was wrestling phenomenal. I wish we had days like this now. I would love it. Even though things are getting better in the wrestling world. We'll be honest. But I really, really, the more and more I watch this stuff over again, the more and more I get pumped up. And it's sometimes, you know, because some things I don't remember, it's actually like watching it for the first time, which is nice.
Yeah, so really, we are heating up coming out of Starrcade, and December is I would almost say December is as eventful as November was as we get into both parts of December. But before we get to some of that again, Colin McDougal, how are you doing tonight?
I am good, Sean. Thank you very much. It's good to be back. I am in December 1985. It was good to hear the Saturday night theme again. On the network, so it's about time we got back to it. So it's back on track though, and couldn't be more excited about it.
Yep. So before we jump into what we're going to talk about tonight, we'll talk about a kind of housekeeping item. So Jacob Williams was going to join us tonight. He's going to join us for part one and part two of December 85, but Mother Nature, obviously, a hurricane came through, and Jake is unfortunately still without power as of this recording. So hopefully Jake will be able to join us for part two on our next episode. So Jake did offer some thoughts on some of the things that happened on the show, and I'll share some of those later on tonight. But he will join us for part two. So tonight, for the first time ever, I believe it's just a three-man team. But obviously, we are very excited to talk about what is happening in this show tonight. The other thing is, we did take some time. I was thinking through the awards. We are going to change up our awards. We will do that at the end of the part two. So at the end of every month watch, we will do our awards for the whole entire month then. So we did change the awards, and I'm going to share those awards with you guys now. We will not have awards on this episode. We will do our awards on the next episode, our new awards. So and every one of them has a wrestling-related item or something to this podcast. So the David Crockett Award. Normally it was the Stroke Out Award and David Crockett's reaction, but we changed it to the David Crockett Award. It'll be the best overall moment on the shows or the person's personal favorite thing in that month. Okay, so that's the David Crockett Award. The Arn Anderson Award, I think, is self-explanatory. That would be best promo. The Dusty Broken Leg Award is the best angle that we like this month, or continuing angle, since that's probably the biggest angle we've done that led into Starrcade 85. The Jimmy Valiant Award, I also think, is self-explanatory. That is the worst match. The Magnum Award will be the representation of whatever the best match was for the month we watched. So think about the Starrcade 85 I Quit match as the standard bearer. So whatever the best match is, we're going to call that the Magnum Award. The Wahoo Award, whoever this month's Watch would be the least valuable player. I think we're all aligned on Wahoo at this point in time. Hey, Colin, the good news is in December, we have zero Wahoo McDaniel. So really a great comeback with no Wahoo on this episode.
Oh, music to my ears after the past few months.
But we do have the proper award to represent him now. So I think we're in a good spot there. And then last but not least, we'll have the Flair Award, which will be the MVP. So we changed up the awards correlation with that person's name, and we'll make sure we outline as we go forward when we do those awards what those awards stand for, just until people get used to that. So
the Abomination Award. I think
we could call it the Wahoo slash Abomination Award. I think that would work out well. Actually, you could put Abomination on the Jimmy Valiant Award too. So we could have two of those. But at any rate, those will be our awards moving forward, and we'll have those at the end of our next episode. So with that context, we are coming out of Starrcade 85, the controversial Flair Dusty match for the world title. TA is your new U.S. champion. The TV title right now is vacant. The Rock and Roll Express have regained the tag team titles from the Russians. The six-man tag are still in the hands of the Russians. We have a new national champion in Buddy Landell, and we have a new Mid-Atlantic champion in Crusher Khrushchev. So we kind of have a clear landscape at this point with almost every single champion being new except for the six-man title and the world title at this point. So before we jump into December, Dr. G, any thoughts on Starrcade 85? We talked about on that podcast back in March, but any thoughts on kind of a reset of who the champions are at this point? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the thing is, obviously the big one is TA being the U.S. champ. I mean, obviously, many think that's the greatest match of all time, or at least of in WCW slash NWA, which I'm in agreement with. But just seeing how they're making that belt, not that Tully didn't, but that belt is, you know, there's references to it, which we'll talk about tonight, you know, that they are the number one contender to the world heavyweight title when you're the U.S. champion. So I think that the belt came out looking stronger, out of Starrcade. That's the big thing I take away from that. And Starrcade itself as a pay-per-view was really good too. So nice way to start doing the so-called pay-per-view era with Starrcade 85.
Excellent. And I also forgot to mention the Andersons, bless their heart and God bless the greatness that they are still your national tag team champions, beating Wahoo and Billy Jack at Starrcade.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you the truth. I mean, the Andersons, I didn't appreciate them like I do now at the time. And even Ole, I mean, just a great team. Honestly, they should have been world tag team champions, to be honest.
100%. Colin, any thoughts on kind of the reset now that we're out of Starrcade 85 and we're starting a journey into kind of a new direction, I guess you could say, at this point?
The U.S. title change was refreshing. Given that obviously it was an excellent match. I think it was the highest match that we've had, the highest rated match that we've had on the podcast so far. The national title probably did another reset with Buddy Landell. Although when your other option is Terry Taylor, I'm not sure where you go with that. But no, I mean there's one point where obviously we had new world tag team champions. The tag division is just, and there's a promo that we'll discuss later on that you talk about the tag division. It's just all, it's bubbling away nicely and it's heating up nicely, and there's the best is yet to come from that one. So I'm thoroughly looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. I mean, everyone knows that we've got Flair, Dusty, Magnum, Tully, the Horseman, all that sort of thing, just coming to the forefront now. But the tag division I think is just starting to come to, it's just starting to come to a boil quite nicely and at the right time. So I can't wait to see what's going to come from that, because I know it's going to be, just looking at the people involved, you just know it's going to be a home run.
All right. Well, very good. With that, are we ready to jump into December 85?
Let's do it.
Yeah, all right, let's do it.
So we are going to start with December 7th, 1985 World Championship Wrestling. As always, for those of you that might not remember, when we do this pod, we pick out the kind of the best of what's going on with the feuds and what makes sense in terms of futures and things like that that are happening on those individual shows. So we have some big things happening in terms of, I think, three core things we're looking at in this episode. And then we have a match that we're going to talk about as we get to the end of this episode. So up first, we've had a lot of conversation about the U.S. title to open the show. And the first two interviews we have that we're going to discuss are really Tully and Magnum. So Tully comes out first. Tony says he's a very – Tony Schiavone and David Crockett, as always, are on point. Tony says Tully is very distraught, concerned about his future. Baby Doll is there, of course, with him at this point in time. And as far as fashion, same thing. Hot pink jacket, sad face by Baby Doll. Very sullen Tully. And one thing that I noticed that I kind of liked a little bit, I don't know if they did this on purpose, was Tully comes out dressed to the nines, right? But he's in a sweatshirt, which, you know, Tully, you know, kind of maybe portraying how down in the dumps he is. He's not feeling his greatest. So he comes out in a sweatshirt. He's got Band-Aid and scars all over his head, obviously, from Starrcade. He says it's very disturbing how the NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions, and Bob Geigel railroaded him into an I Quit match in which he never even said it, which I don't know what his thought process was, because he very clearly did. He says TA now has a U.S. title, but I defeated the man in a wrestling match, and I don't know when or where Magnum TA. One day I will get it back in a wrestling match and win my U.S. title back where it belongs. I made that title what it is today, not you. And a very short, literally minute-long promo from Tully that really sells how he feels about losing the match, which I really like. So then we go to Magnum TA later on. TA comes out front and center with his classic leather vest with his U.S. title displayed prominently. He's also bandaged up, says the Starrcade match, I Quit match, was the most brutal match of his entire career and all of history, and now we look towards the future. He rattles off Buddy Landell, Tully, Arn, Oli, anyone that can unseat him. As someone yells, hey, you show the mag in the crowd. The crowd's really hot for him. He said the contracts are out for any of these individuals. The belt was not made to be put on the shelf, be kept nice and clean. It's made to be defended, and that's what I'm going to do. Then he goes into the first we've heard about this, the Bunkhouse Stampede. And the Bunkhouse Stampede, obviously, is a Dusty Rhodes creation, a battle royal scenario with all these folks where the winner gets $20,000. And then you see highlights. TA says it's one of the most exciting matches he's ever taken place in. Battle royal situation where you can bring whatever you want, bring what you want to the ring. Pretty much everyone wears muscle tees in it and jeans and cowboy boots. It's definitely a Dusty special and a creation when you see this in the video. The one thing I did laugh at was Sam Houston wearing a Gold's Gym muscle tee with his skinny little ass, which I thought was hilarious. Tony says congrats to TA, and now we've sold the U.S. title, and we've also sold these Bunkhouse Stampedes that are happening across the country, which we won't talk a lot too much in December 85 about, because they talk about it, but nothing really crazy comes out of it. But I thought it was interesting to note this is the first appearance and conversation they have around the Bunkhouse Stampede. So, G, I'll go to you first. What did you think about these two promos from Tully and TA?
You know, I agree with you with Tully. You saw him come out with the sweatshirt. You know, it's what just great psychology, okay? We're not going to dress to the nines. This is how I'm feeling. I'm down in the dumps. And you a totally different promo that we've ever seen from mm-hmm. Tully. You know, usually he's very confident, he's very cocky, he's loud, and here he's just very sullen and just, you know, making his point, you know, kind of like selling it like, you know, I didn't get beat in a regular wrestling match, and that's the way I want to win back the title. And the main thing between both promos is how they're selling the U.S. title. I love it. That title is meaning a lot, which is something that we need to see more of today. Like, I like when the championships mean something. And even though this is not the world championship. This is the, you know, the belt that you take, you know, the next step to becoming world heavyweight champion. And TA, yes, I like the part about selling the Bunkhouse Stampede. He kind of did, you know, twofold promo there. Again, selling the championship, this belt means a lot. I'm gonna put it up on the shelf. I'm going to defend it against all comers. Just, again, totally selling everything. And the whole point of this show was to get people to come out live to the live shows. And watching these two promos, it makes you want to do that. It makes you want to see TA and Magnum go at it again. It makes you maybe want to see what the Bunkhouse Stampede is about. Just totally well done. I really enjoyed both promos.
Yeah, me too. I think this is a great open. I love the selling of the match by both with the bandaged up. I love the Solon Tully. I love TA. Now he's the champion. He's opening it up to everybody. I also like that they sold the Bunkhouse Stampede. So no time to relax coming out of Starrcade 85. But the Tully promo particularly I really like because of the totally different Tully transitioning character based on what was happening at the time. Callum, what'd you think?
Tully has got a point. So they built up the whole match to say the person that loses is the person that says I quit. And it's to come back to the old Mick Foley one. But at the end of the match, he was asked if he quit and he said yes. So he's never actually uttered the words I quit. Now, technicality speaking.
You're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, but he's strictly not lying. So he's got, and he's very good at running with just the wee. He's got the wee thread to pull at, and he's always been really, really good at exploiting that. So I thought it was really, really good. The Magnum one as well was excellent. I thought both of them were very, very good promos coming out of what was one of the best matches in, or I think according to our recent GWCW, a top five match in the history of that company. So yeah, nice that it's keeping bubbling on. I don't know where you really go much after that, because that did seem like a definitive full stop on that feud. But
they go to Puerto Rico and wrestle for 4 minutes.
Of course, how could I forget that absolute barnstormer of a match? So I don't really know where they go, but I'm not gonna stop them trying to go somewhere if we get more of the same.
Absolutely. So really great way to open it and come right out of Starrcade 85 hot with the main big match, or the best match, and both guys selling it. So really good there. So now we're going to transition to the next big happening of Starrcade 85, and that is the Flair Rhodes Tommy Young scenario. So controversy, obviously. So Tommy Young comes out. Tony says, no doubt controversy at Starrcade 85. David Crockett says, there is no controversy. What controversy would there be? Says the world champion is Dusty Rhodes. And he's really condescending and saying, I'm right about this. And he's being a total like dick about it, which classic. I mean, he's just fired up about it. And he goes, didn't you see him, Tony? He pinned Flair, dude. And then he's talking about how Dusty pinned Flair. That's correct. Tony says yes, but the belt was returned. And they bring in the five-time ref of the year, Tommy Young, who looks really sad and dejected with his brown jacket, shirt, and tie. Looks like he lost like his favorite pet or something when he comes out. Tommy calls it an up and down match with lots of action and brings up all the things that they did in the match. And then he goes, Arn interferes. I was on the floor. And then he claims he called a DQ while he was hurt for Dusty, I guess, doing something in the match, I guess throwing Flair over the rope or something like that. He said he didn't want Dusty to get hurt. But as he went in to get in the match, Dusty threw Arn into him, knocking him down again. And then he remembers nothing. His official stance is it was a DQ. David Crockett continues to go all in on him, calls bullshit, basically. And he says challenges him on the call. And Tony says, I'm not sure. Tommy says, I'm not real sure. I made that call. It is what it is. David Crockett says, we aren't finished with this yet. More on this as he looks totally disgusted at a weak Tommy Young. I thought this was tremendous. And one thing I got to say about Tommy Young has been voted referee of the year many, many times, and he's much lauded as one of the greatest referees of all time. The reality is, if I really stand back and peel back onions on Tommy Young, there's a lot of dusty finishes that I think hurt him. I think he gets hurt a lot. There's a lot of bumps, and he makes questionable decisions. And I really ponder in my head how they make Tommy Young referee of the year. I know he's really good in the matches, but when it comes to decision-making, seems like we get a lot of these that are coming up over the Crockett years, and this is probably like the second or third time we've seen it on this podcast already. So hold your thought on Tommy Young, because then Ric Flair comes out, and the crowd goes nuts. David Crockett shakes his head in absolute disgust. Flair looks great in blue, in his suit and sunglasses. He's displaying the 10 pounds of gold as usual. Flair says it was a popular decision. David Crockett continues to look at Flair smugly, and Flair says, as for you, smart guy, I don't care if you are one at the top of the biggest wrestling organization in the world. You aren't Ric Flair, and you're not the world champion. If you got a personal opinion to voice it to Tommy Young. Don't personally like the man, but, you know, he's five-time ref of the year, and he causes as he sees it. And the crowd is actually cheering this, which I thought was tremendous. Then he goes, Crockett gets really shitty, as Flair says. He says something about his shirt. He says, he says to Tommy, you rep the refs of the world, David Crockett. Stick to what you do best. Talking into mics and signing checks. Leave the wrestling to me. Dusty Rhodes, and then someone yells, tell him, Rick. So the crowd is 100% behind Rick. He goes, Dusty Rhodes, it's only just begun. In the eyes of the people around the world, glitter and sparkly stuff have rubbed off on Ric Flair. I still wear cashmere. I'm still in my alligators, still diamonds and Rolex, still limos, still limo riding, still driving women completely nuts out of their minds. And I'm still the world champ. Do I make myself clear? And then he goes, woo, because the girls continue to go ape shit. And he does another woo. So this Tommy Young and Ric Flair, David Crockett stuff for me was 7 minutes of pure great. So, Colin, what did you think of this whole Tommy Young, Ric Flair, David Crockett stuff?
Well, I agree with you on the whole Tommy Young referee of the year. I've questioned this on a number of times since we started this podcast, because some of the things that he does, you wonder who votes for this award. Because to me, he's absolutely hopeless. As you say, he always gets himself in the mix where he doesn't need to be. He ends up always hurt. He makes calls like he did at Starrcade. I don't understand how he's referee there. It's almost like it's made up. It's almost like it's a fake sport.
He's like the Wahoo of referees, right?
It's not that bad.
Okay,
all right. Yeah, it's pretty bad. The MVP of this whole thing was David Crockett. David Crockett was just being a wee shit. Just not accepting, not wanting to accept the outcome of the match. Now, Jets, you'll need to remind me. I don't remember. I obviously remember the finish of Starrcade. Who was it that counted the pin for Dusty to actually win? I could have sworn it was Tommy Young.
It was.
Tommy Young has decided on a whim. So he wanted to disqualify a man, but then he gets in the ring and previously having wanted to disqualify him counts to three. Yeah. Again, this is more reason why he should have all of his referee of the year awards revoked. Useless. Dusty promo after it was just peak Dusty.
I haven't gotten a Dusty yet, so hold that thought.
Apologies, I'm just getting ahead of myself because it was so good. But the Flair part and the it's just Ric Flair, isn't it? But MVP the whole thing, which is strange to say in a Ric Flair promo as David Crockett. Even though he's signing checks line was fantastic.
Oh, and by the way, Colum, we were both stand corrected. A new referee came in and counted the pinfall on Flair at Starrcade. Why Tommy Young was out. So yeah, we had another ref come out.
I take back what I said about Tommy Young. He's slightly less useless now.
Okay. Dr. G, what'd you think of this Tommy Young, Ric Flair, David Crockett stuff? Dr. G, you're on mute.
Oh.
There you go.
No, it's I'm sorry, it just skipped out a little bit for whatever reason. I don't know if it's my fee. Well, I mean, the whole thing with Tommy Young, I think that's the way he's booked. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's, you know, through Dusty, I think that's why he's all into these controversial things. His big thing was the way he jumps and gets for the pin quick. And mm-hmm. And if you listen to Ric Flair and you listen to a lot of those guys in that time, that's the ref they wanted in the ring at that time. Now, there's other things that we don't see that a referee does, you know, or with the talent. So, you know, obviously I don't know all of that part, but that's I guess, you know, I always remember hearing his name, you know, when we were growing up, about Tommy Young, you know, the best referee. But I kind of like how they included him in the storyline and brought him out, and he kind of looked dejected, but he was trying to explain it. And, you know, just to kind of put over the whole.
Yeah, I get it. But I feel like they overdid it with Tommy Young. Like, they do it so many times, it almost gets to a point of where it's comedic, I guess. Listen, Tommy Young is a good ref in general, but I feel like this whole thing where scenarios like this happen in the big matches happens a lot, and it doesn't do him any favors, was I guess my
point. Well, and that's where the criticism, you know, and again, there's some great things that Dusty did, and there's some not so great things, but that goes for any booker, promoter. I mean, listen, we love some things that Vince McMahon did, and we hate things that he's done. You know what I'm saying? Even the best of them have bad days, and I think that's one of the things that Dusty did a lot. He loved those controversial ref finishes. That was a big thing for Dusty. I mean, trust me, I've seen many matches live. You know, like I said, my first time I ever went to a match, it was he versus Ric Flair for the world title, and it was a whole thing with too much bleeding. He grabbed the microphone stand and kept hitting Dusty on the arm with it, and they stopped the match because due to blood. And the match wasn't even like 5 or 10 minutes. So, you know, and always these controversial finishes all the time. You know, that's just the way he did it. And I think that's the way they booked Tommy Young. But I see what you guys are saying, but I just think a lot of that was just the way he was booked. I don't think it's him personally. Obviously, he wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have him determining the outcome of the match. But I like the way they use it. The Flair was just totally on in this promo. Mm-hmm.
He was feeling
I love the way he goes
tonight.
Back at David Crockett. Because didn't David Crockett, you know, during the beginning of this watch, like, oh, he's Ric Flair's a good friend of mine and this whole thing,
well,
you know. And
well, Flair saved him against Nikita after Nikita clotheslined. Like, that whole match was based on Nikita clotheslining David Crockett because they were best friends. That's what set up the match at Great American Bash. So
exactly. And yeah. But I think I just love the back and forth. I love sometimes Flair went a little behind the curtain sometimes, you know, like saying, you know, that he because they didn't always mention that David Crockett was the VP and, mm-hmm. you know, he's writing the chat. You know, like I like that, you know, we probably totally didn't pick up on it when we were younger. But I like that they sometimes, you know, he got a little on the kind of broke the kayfabe a little bit.
Yep.
You know, because, you know, look at how many years we didn't, you know, you always heard that Vince McMahon owned the WWF, but on TV, he never alluded to it, never, you know, he was just the announcer. So I like the way they kind of peeled back a little bit just to kind of give an idea. Just, again, when you break these things down and you become a wrestling fan and seasoned over the years and you really go back and you dissect like we're doing and you see the what they were trying to do and the story they're trying to tell and the psychology is just phenomenal.
Yep. Good. And this is just seven minutes of just great stuff overall from Tommy Young, from Flair and from Crockett. And then we get Dusty who comes out later. So Dusty's out in a sports coat and a gray t-shirt and looks like he desperately needs a haircut. Just kind of a hot mess. He said, Starrcade match was tremendous. Nothing to say about Tommy's credentials. Same thing he basically said in a promo that he did when Slater. Remember when him and Slater won the tag team belts from the Russians? it was the same thing happened. Tommy Young reversed the decision. So he said nothing about Tommy's credentials. So again, here's another situation where Tommy cost Dusty a title. I'd probably be a little more pissed off than Dusty is. He says, fine, it is what it is. Right now, I want to talk to Nature Boy Ric Flair. For sure, you know, you can be pinned. You can be beat at any time. And you can live with it. Someone says, and then someone in the crowd says, live with it, baby. Then Dusty calls out the people that were cheering Flair. He goes, all the snotty nosed punk girls in the audience that Flair planted here can yell all they want, because unless you have a real man, you don't know what it is all about. And then he sheds his coat. Now then, he said, this is not over. The women here might not be happy. It's not over. He just goes into a line about the airport. He goes, I pinned the world champion in front of 100,000 people, which obviously is a big stretch. There were 100,000 people in that arena. And that's what it's all about. And then he basically says, he just goes on and says, Flair, and I will beat you. I will pin you. I'll become the world champion. And then they show a video of the match. And I will tell you, it was very clear. Dusty Rhodes was not happy. The fans were like Ric Flair, because this is all about him being kind of a dick to them. So, Colin, what did you think about this Dusty Rhodes interview?
I'm with you. I understand where Dusty's coming from. That he knows that Flair can be beat because he's pinned him. However, he's just been shafted out of the world championship. I would be a touch more pissed off. I mean, I would be a bit more pissed off with that as a silver lining, not the reason that you're happy-go-lucky and going, it's okay, people, I am... The whole hard times, I'm doing this all for you. And then you come out a couple of days later and go, I tried my best, it's okay, because I can pin him. No, you should be annoyed and going and making sure you get your rematch, making sure that you take... you don't take any of this Bob Giggle bullshit. It was very... I got the point of the promo, but it was very strangely executed in terms of like that theme of it. That being said, it's a Dusty Rhodes promo, and it was... He said more in 2 minutes than most people do in 10 today. So, and you just can't help but be captivated when Dusty Rhodes speaks. So, it's not. I'm not gonna slander it too much.
Yep. I still thought it was good, even though I, like I said, I probably would have been a little more angry if I were Dusty, especially as Tommy Young continues to just shit me out of titles. Dr. G, what'd you think here?
I thought the promo was interesting, you know, like, I was a little confused by the 100,000 thing.
Well, that was him, you know, being Dusty, saying there's 100,000 people. That's just him being Dusty.
When I heard it, I thought, okay, was he thinking maybe, I said, then he sold himself short. Was he counting, including the, you know, then they have the closed circuit, or, you know, I know obviously the infancy of pay-per-view. But I didn't know what he was trying to say.
Oh, maybe. I thought he was going for those in the arena, which I thought was funnier, if that's what he was really meaning. So
Dusty definitely had a little edge on this promo, though.
Oh, he did.
You know? But, you know, he and Flair, you know, they had that love-hate thing going. So I think now we're doing the hate part.
Yeah, he was not happy with the women and how they reacted to Flair tonight. Clearly. Very clear. But
I love listening to him talk, though. Yep. I don't know if it's just the way he the cadence of the way he talks, or that's obviously why he was my favorite when I was younger. Just, you know, sometimes his promos don't make sense, if you want to put it that way, but he talks people into seats, so yeah, he's doing something right.
Yep. So again, we open up hot with the two main matches from Starrcade 85, with the U.S. title and the world title and that whole controversy. And now what we're going to move on to is the Road Warriors and the Russians. So at the end of November, I think one of the pods we did, we had an angle where the Russians attacked Paul Ellerin and then attack the Road Warriors. So the Warriors come out looking badass as always with their collars, their forearm wear and paint. Tony brings up the incident from the last episode of Saturday Night where Paul was blindsided and the Road Warriors were attacked. Paul's in a neck collar. Also, as always, in a great kimono. Paul says, congrats to the Russians. You are what you are. And this is not a complicated issue. It's elementary and simple. World War III is here, and you just started it. Then they show the video from last week. Animal jumps in, 3 versus 1. How fair is that? It's never fair with the Russians. Hawk says, takes 3 wrestlers to do anything to run 1 Road Warrior. Animal can slap us. Animal says, you can slap us, knock us down, but we will get back up and get in your face. We've been in wars before in Chicago, where we grew up, and we're always outnumbered, and we always come through. We will get even. Hawk says the Russians have done something they've hurt us physically, and they talk about they hurt their pride. For that, they will pay, and it ain't too smart to be so stupid, which I thought was pretty funny. Russians, when we get down in the town or in Moscow, is all we don't care. You will need more than a spare brain. He basically says we're gonna tear you from limb to limb. We are ripping it off. We're gonna take it out on your hides. And basically says it's in our backyard, not yours. Kick your tails right back to Moscow. And it's just a crazy promo by the Road Warriors. I loved it. So then we get the Russians a little later, and I found the Russians promo to be kind of their standard thing. Crusher's out holding the Mid-Atlantic title that he won from Sam Houston. Tony says, wouldn't want to be in their shoes as the Road Warriors are on your back. Ivan says, what you care, American. We are proud of Crusher Khrushchev winning the Mid-Atlantic title. I'm also proud of Nikita, the Rock and Roll Express. They robbed us. Ref was hurt previous match. And, of course, he blames that on the Rock and Roll Express winning the match. Nikita gets angry and says, we fear no one, but we don't fear these Road Warriors. He babbles some more. We see most powerful team who are more superior versus the Road Warriors, and it's hard to really understand them. And then they talk about their 6-man trophy, they're the 6-man tag team titles. And then they talk about fighting the Road Warriors any place. Watch your back. We are out to prove something, and we're going to against you. So kind of a standard Russians promo, but I like the heat of the Road Warriors interview with the Russians, and now it feels like we have a really hot tag team feud that we will be seeing. And honestly, in our next episode, we will actually see a match between the Russians and the Road Warriors, which I'm excited to talk about in our next episode. But Dr. G, what did you think of the Russians and the Road Warriors here? I thought it was pretty good.
I did too. You know, the Road Warriors are a better promo than people give them credit for. You know, Ellering is great, and that's why they had him with them. But, you know, Hawk and Animal got their point across when they needed to. And, you know, especially Animal, when he gets all fired up, the things he comes out with at times is just amazing. And, you know, the Russians, this is not one of the best Russian promos I've seen. I of the two promos, I definitely think LOD was much stronger. But this is a great feud. This is, you know, this is what you want to see. You want to see two big Haas teams just go at each other. And it makes you, again, you sit there and you watch that, you know what? I want to go live to see these two teams go at each other. Yep. And again, just I think that's the thing I missed the most during our watches. Of course, I loved watching all the different matches that we watched, but the promos, you know, it just sucks you in, and it almost brings you back to that time. Like you're like, okay, I want to see a match now between the Road Warriors and the Russians. And you know, I thought the one note I had was I think LOD doesn't get as much credit as they should for some of their interviews. I think that they're very good especially when they're fired up.
Yeah, their interviews, and again, this past summer, the Road Warriors is one of the teams that I've grown a bigger appreciation for over the summer because they had some really good matches, and then this promos just continues to rile me up around them and how good they really are. So really good stuff from the Road Warriors. And Nikita Kalem, God bless it. I know he's your relative, distant relative, but he's got to get over this we will destroy you, blah, blah, blah stuff that he always does because it's starting to become a little tedious. So what did you think, Kalem?
Well, he is the Soviet Union's ambassador of destruction. He is all he cares about is destroying things. he's an ambassador for it. The Russian stuff is very paint by numbers. You know, just put in every so often the same things, just in potentially a different order. But you normally get the Russians' promos are just normally, you know, the same thing every week. Not necessarily a bad thing because they are always in hot feuds. Again, as you mentioned, very strong kimono game from Paul Ellering. Mm-hmm. Even rocking the neck brace with it doesn't detract from the fact that he's got a wonderful kimono on. I felt like Hawk, I love a shouty promo as much as the next guy, but I felt like Hawk had about four opportunities to stop his promo. Obviously needed to keep going for like, they're obviously getting a nod that he needed to go for like another 30 seconds, and it just became word salad at the end, and he just kept talking and talking, and I think he knew what to say. And I had on the recent All Out Twitch, Jerry and Tim will attest to, I had a bit of an issue when I was trying to finish my sentence before I'd started it. And it just, I don't know what words I was saying, and I feel like Hawk was having that issue here. I feel he knew what he wanted to say at the end, but didn't know how to start it, and just ended up saying a lot of stuff that it got the point across, but it didn't like make a lot of sense at the same time. But again, it's an LOD promo, it's shouty, it's intense. Animal's hitting himself, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, and now I've set up to, I'm looking forward to seeing this match. You know, I'm definitely looking forward to that. So, really big time tag team feud there. And Warriors, good. Yeah, Hawk babbled a little bit. Russians, pretty standard promo here. All right, so with that, we're going to close out December 7th with a match, a really big time match coming out of Starrcade 85. I feel like they might have undersold this main event a little bit on this program. I know they talked about it, but it seems like a big deal. So, obviously, our favorite tag team on this show, the Andersons, still your national tag team champions, and Tully Blanchard are taking on Tully, Magnum TA, Billy Jack Haynes, and Sam Houston. And guys, I'm not going to go line by line in this match. One of the things I'm going to try to do is, you know, cut away from kind of doing the play-by-play, but and let you guys kind of talk about the match. But this is a 20-minute, to me, I enjoyed this match a lot. A 20-minute match on a Saturday night television with what I probably call five of your biggest stars, and then Sam Houston. Billy Jack has been impressive. He was impressive in this. TA was impressive in this. There was some good heat by the Andersons, as always, in this match. Ole and Arn are just so fantastic. They tag teamwork. You know, Tully at one point nails a modified pyre driver. TA in this match, I think, is an amazing face in peril, fighting back. And getting some hope spots, but they just keep the heels just keep tagging back and forth to keep him from his side of the ring. We finally get a suplex to Tully. He tags Houston as Tully then tags Ole. Houston is a ball of fire, just like he usually is, and he's beating up both Andersons. Hits a bulldog on Ole, but Tully makes the save. All six men get in the ring. Tully and TA go outside. The ref is pushing Billy Jack away from Arn as Houston goes to pin Ole. Arn Anderson goes to the top rope, leaps across the ring, and hits Sam on the back, and then puts Ole on top. And while that's happening, Billy Jack gets a full Nelson on Arn, but the ref counts Houston down to three. I thought for a 20-minute match on a free show coming out of Starrcade 85, I thought this was a hell of a match. I went 3 stars. I don't think it was ever in doubt who was going to take the pinfall loss in here. Before we recorded, I was talking to Dr. G about this match. As much as I like Sam Houston, I feel like he took away from the star power of what could have been this match. If you had slid in like a Manny Fernandez and maybe the Andersons pin Manny, I probably would have loved it because Manny, you know, obviously had the big win at Starrcade 85. So beating him would have been a bigger deal than beating a Sam Houston who lost a Mid-Atlantic title at Starrcade. But I enjoyed this match. I went 3 stars. Colin, what do you think?
I am going to join you on 3 stars. for, as you say, for a Saturday night's main event match. A Saturday night match. You're talking about a lot of star power, and for 20 minutes, the action barely stopped. It just started off quick and just stayed at that pace for the whole time. You got Magnum and Tully in the ring at the same time, which was like, you would think that they would make a big deal about that. It was the first time that Magnum and Tully have faced off against each other, Puerto Rico aside, since Starrcade, or at least on television. The one thing that it bothered me more than it probably should. However, there was a tag at one point where I think Magnum tags in Sam Houston, and Sam Houston goes up the top and he drops. He goes up and Magnum has wrenched, I think it was Ole or Arn's arm, and Sam Houston comes down with an axe handle or a knee. Now, given that that was the way that the Andersons broke Sam Houston's arm, and that was a big storyline for a few weeks, I think they either should have made a big deal about that, because that could potentially be Sam Houston getting his revenge, or don't do that spot at all. I think it might just be that it's sort of the go-to move when two guys team together that aren't a proper tag team, so don't do double team moves. But I feel, so they've obviously just been, Sam Houston's maybe just been caught up in the moment, or the two of them been caught up in the moment, but I feel that that was something that should have either been made a big deal of or not done at all. But in saying that, I mean, that's just a throwaway spot in what was a great 20-minute match. I felt bad for, there wasn't a lot of Billy Jack in this match, but I feel like he was sort of the sixth man, because you've got Sam Houston, who's had his issues with the Andersons, you've got Magnum and Tully, who've also got their issues, and Billy Jack was there without being disrespectful, just to make up the numbers, so they had a third man on their team. But after what we've seen in the and I think we've said this consistently, Billy Jack Haynes has been one of the surprises of this podcast. So anytime he gets thrown in a match, it's excellent. He did the bit where he had the back to back to back power slams, and that was, we got a contender for the David Crockett stroke out award. It might still win and under the new guise of the Crockett award, because he was going, he lost his shit when he did that, especially when he managed to get Ole up when it looked as if Ole wasn't wanting to go up. But no, all round it was a great match.
Yeah, Colin, I love your points, and it's interesting. So I do listen to Arn Anderson's podcast, and he's currently doing 85 Timeline, and his last episode prior to the one that he released recently was about that Sam Houston angle where they broke his arm. And I think you're right. I think based on the history of just that alone, and then Magnum beating Tully for the U.S. title, I feel like it was really undersold. And it just felt like, hey, this is this great big main event, but I feel like the announcers and the program could have really sold this match big time based on all the history. And that's why I think maybe for me it felt, man, this was a really big time match, and I feel like it was undersold a little bit. So yeah, it was just strange and weird. So I think you brought up some good points. Dr. G, what'd you think about this match?
You know, it's funny, I have that note. I thought that the announcers seemed to be a little blasé about the match. I don't know why, because like you said, the odd man out in this was Billy Jack, because he wasn't really feuding with anybody here. Mm-hmm. But wow, I marked out on the slams. You know, I love watching Billy Jack wrestle, like I said, because he was definitely one of my favorites growing up. And I gave it, you know, I originally didn't, but I changed after listening to you guys speak. I had 2.75 stars. I actually decided to go with you guys and go with 3 stars. By far for me, you know, as we go through this watch for this week, is the best match of all the matches that we'll see tonight. And I just felt like the announcers just didn't care about it as much, which really befuddled me. And, you know, anytime you can watch the Andersons and Tully get together. And, you know, Sam Houston, kind of like, he doesn't do anything for me. I never really got him, to be honest.
He's a good hand, Dr. G.
He's a good hand. He was a good hand in WWF, too.
Well, no, you know, he was a jobber in the WWF. I mean, I guess he's a jobber here where he gets a few lucky wins here, but yeah.
Usually when you say he's a good hand, most of the time they're jobbing.
Especially when you say it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I really enjoyed this match. It was a good match for, like Callum was saying, for, you know, the Saturday night show. And anytime you can watch the Andersons and Tully get together. Ooh.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. All right. So that closes out December 7th. So we're going to jump right into December 14th and close out December 14th before we take our first break. And really, we're hitting home on, let's see, we have a couple interviews here. We have the Andersons, Dusty and Magnum on an all-timer here. We're going to talk about the Rock and Roll Express, and then we have a match, and then we'll take our break after that. So December 14th, 1985, World Championship Wrestling. We're going to open it up with America's Team first, and this is a segment with the America's Team, and then later on the Andersons. I'm not going to go line by line on some of these promos, especially America's Team. So the first thing I'm going to say is the gist of this interview with America's Team coming out in the most ridiculous fur coats you have ever seen. And I want you to think about hillbillies in the backwoods with Dusty Rhodes coming out in a $33,000 fur coat. Dusty's talking about Buddy Landell, was out here talking about how he's a top contender of the world title. Dusty just babbles something about Buddy Landell, says who's zooming who. And then he talks about it's plain to see who the U.S. champion is. He's the number one contender. Anytime in your mind, if you can take that from me, go ahead. And they just go to so many different spots. They talk about taking a plane to Alaska. Dusty goes into Ric Flair, talking about dollars and cents. He talks about how Ric Flair deals the money. You wearing sheer sucker suits, walking around playing risky business with the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And then Dusty talks about how I'm walking around a crippled man wearing a boot with steel toe in it, hobbling around. I ain't forgetting about nothing. I'm going to give you one picture and I want you to look at it. And then he walks around the corner from behind the desk, sauntering and showing off his coat. The crowd goes wild to the coat. And Dusty goes, the beautiful 80s women approve, Ric Flair. $33,000, Jack. And that's how they end the interview. So basically, this was Dusty and TA to come out and talk about how great they look in their fur coats, take some pot shots at a few people, the Andersons, Ric Flair, and then ended it with Dusty telling Ric Flair, look at my $33,000 fur coats. A column. We'll do the Andersons next, and we'll talk about this promo. The Andersons are next. And I like how we pan out. Like, they do a lot of this where they pan out with a close-up of the national tag team titles. And he says, we are here with the Andersons. I love orange sunglasses. And then this promo is about, they talk about breaking Dusty's leg. They talk about Dusty failing to win the world title from Ric Flair. And then they get into talking about the Bunkhouse Stampedes, the vacant TV title, and how Arn's going to win the TV title within that. It says it rightfully belongs to him. Ollie says the TV title tournament's coming up. We are going to be in that. And Dusty Rhodes is going to be out there like a chicken sucking eggs. The belt is going back to where it belongs, and it belongs on Arn. He says, as far as the national tag team titles, still looking for somebody that could actually take a chance on us and beat us. And we want to go for and he calls the national tag team titles the world titles, which is fine with me because they are my world tag team champions. They said there's no one in this industry that can do it. And so, again, they just talk and talk and talk. They talk about the Bunkhouse Stampedes. Then Arn calls out Sam Houston, who's in the ring, as they walk off. So I love Dusty and Magnum coming out, just doing their thing. The fur coats added an element. I love the Andersons coming out, talking their shit about America's Team, talking about beating up Dusty Rhodes, taking the TV title. I thought this was just two great promos in this. So, Colin, I'll start with you. What did you think of these two interviews?
The America's Team looked wonderfully resplendent in those fur coats.
I think Magnum did. Dusty, I'm questioning a little bit, but I loved every minute of it.
The on the network, they had that picture as sort of the timestamp, and my God, they just looked absolutely ridiculous. They had, I mean, Magnum's fur coat was quite big. Dusty's, obviously, because he is a larger gentleman, needed to be bigger. However, I don't think it needed to be as big as it was. I think it was, it looked as if, it was as if you were doing a comedy sketch. Now, I'll spare you the comedy. There is a comedy sketch that from two guys over here. But I think if I told that story, it would only be Rory and Ben that would actually get the reference. But it was as if Dusty was coming out and was just like, I'm going to get the biggest fur coat because I'm just going to make a complete and utter mockery of this whole thing. It was just wonderful. I mean, I barely remember what they actually said, because I was focusing on these quotes.
What they said was really irrelevant, because they said a lot of the same thing they said earlier, but the fur coats was just a whole another level.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was just, everything was made better. I feel nowadays Raw would be a bit more watchable if there was more fur coats like this.
So that's what Raw needs, more fur coats to be better.
Exactly. Raw's not, yeah, it was irrelevant. Poor storylines, irrelevant. More fur coats. That's what fur coats equal ratings. The Anderson's promo. Anderson's promo was excellent. As always. I mean, I think I should just get a soundboard and just say, what do you think of the Anderson's promo? Press the button and goes, the Anderson's promo was excellent. I really did. I liked Ole's part where they were talking about the world TV title tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just basically going, we have entered this to make sure Arn Anderson becomes TV champion. And I was just like, that's brilliant. He's basically entered himself in this tournament as a mercenary for Arn Anderson. And it's one of these ones, like, so the Andersons have talked about the TV title tournament. We've had other people talking about it. Just wish it would have been on. If that was on tape anywhere, I would love to see that tournament, because the guys that they've got in it, that are already talking about being in it, it would be an excellent night of wrestling. And the folk who were lucky enough to be in, believe it was in Greensboro, whoever was lucky enough to be there must have got an excellent night of in ring stuff. Because the build up to it with all these guys in it, it sounded excellent.
You know who's in that TV title tournament, right?
I can't win them all.
Wahoo McDaniel. You know who Arn beats in the finals of that tournament, right?
At least he beat him.
Yeah, no, I will tell you when we get to January. I don't think we have matches from the tournament, but I think there's a segment that we see where they show some of the matches that happened during that tournament. But I will do my due diligence for January to see if I can find any matches from that just for you, Colin, okay?
Well, thank you very much. I feel, as much as I've been praising the people who were lucky enough to be lucky enough to be there live, having to see at least three Wahoo matches when the guy can barely get himself through one, that's torture. I feel bad for them now.
Yeah, could you imagine that night of tournament with Arnie with the Wahoo and that many matches? But anyway, luckily we weren't there. Dr. G, what did you think of these two promos?
Well, you know, when you the America's team coming out with the fur coats, I kind of remember that when I was younger.
It's iconic. Like, it's very iconic.
It is iconic because it was different from what Dusty. You know, Dusty and Magnum, they weren't like, you know, they didn't try to be like Ric Flair. You know, they weren't all, you know, they were all about being the common man, kind of, you know, kicking ass and taking names. And this was more like, you know, they were trying to be like pretty boys that really just didn't totally. It was more funny. Like you said, like I think you got distracted so much by the fur coat, you weren't even really totally paying attention to what they were saying, you know, because it was just like, Wow, that's crazy. And I love that, you know, he mentions that, you know, that he paid $33,000 for him as he's walking off. And you know that was a dig at Ric Flair, because Ric Flair probably bought one. That's what they said. They would be out with their wives, and if, you know, Ric Flair spent $25,000, then, you know, Dusty would go spend $30,000. You know, that's just the way they want to
each other.
I just
like the way he edited it. $33,000, Jack. And then he just walks off.
Walks away, yeah. Yeah, just good stuff, good entertaining stuff that I love. And the Andersons, what could you say? I mean, I think at this point, if we say they had an off night, would probably be more of a shock.
Have we had an Andersons off night yet? I don't think we have in the history of
the show. I don't think so. They're really, really strong at this point in time. And I like the fact that, you know, Arn's like, you know, I already consider myself the TV champion, but just to shut all you people up, you know, I'll enter this tournament and beat everyone so I could prove to everybody that I am the true world TV champion. I'm just paraphrasing there, but that's basically what he's saying. So, Arn's just amazing. And I would listen to his podcast as well, Sean, and it's nice to get some of that insight, even a little bit more insight as we're covering this stuff, because, you know, he actually was there and a part of it. And his recollection of things is really kind of brings everything into focus. But again, the promos are the star of the show, no doubt about it. And that's what it was supposed to be, to get people to come out to the match, you know, come to the live house shows. So
yep.
Good stuff. You picked some good stuff out of these shows, you know, because for the most part, I'll watch pretty much the whole show when I'm watching it, just to get the flow of it, even though we only cover parts of it.
Well, I try to cover what's the most relevant in terms of where storylines are going.
Oh, yeah. No, it's perfect. There's sometimes that I just go to those pieces, but, you know, recently I've just been watching all of it, and it's just you just pick out the best parts. And with the Andersons, it's not too hard, obviously, but some of the other stuff, it's just this was just good stuff. And I you know, and that is iconic. That interview with those fur coats is something that most people from that time remember.
100%. So yeah, really great stuff here. And it's just great. Like I said, I enjoyed our summer viewing and the matches, but the promos add so much more element to it. And This fur coat one is an all-timer, so really go out of your way to check this one out. Okay, so the next one we're going to talk about is a Rock and Roll Express promo. We haven't really talked too much about the Rock and Roll Express. They won the World Tag Team titles. It's like, okay, so what's next for them? So they are here with their tag team titles on display. Tony says, I speak for all the fans. It's good to see the Rock and Roll Express with all the gold again. Then he says, Tony, Robert, we were talking earlier. A lot of great tag teams right now. And then Robert starts talking about all the tag teams that are coming for him. They talk about the Road Warriors. They talk about the Midnight Express. They talk about the Russians being on their trail. And especially in the Midnight Express because we took the belts from them. The crowd is really into the Rock and Roll Express. They are chanting very loudly. The gist of this interview is to get us to where we're going with the Midnight Express. But Rock and Roll, they say, Andersons come out here. They run their mouths. What are you going to do? One thing that I don't like is a man comes out here and says all he's going to do, and then he's got to go do it. And then he basically says, you know, his mouth has written a check that I can't cash. And then he talks about Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express. Talks about Cornette. You listened real good. I know you're out there watching somewhere. There's only one Express around here. It's the Rock and Roll Express. So you come on, bring your boys. And don't show us what, and come out here and show us what you're made of, because brother, you can take your best shot and don't blow it, because the Rock and Roll Express is here to stay, and we will see you in the ring. So basically this whole match is a setup where we're going with the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express as the next big tag title feud. So, that's where we're headed, Rock and Roll and Midnight Express. So Dr. G, what do you think about the setup of this interview? Pretty standard Rock and Roll interview, but I think it sells all the tag team titles, with ultimately they get into the Midnight Express.
Yeah, I think, you know, and again, I know that they kind of get criticized a little bit for not being a great promo, the Rock and Roll Express. Obviously, Ricky Morton's better than Robert Gibson on the stick. But, you know, I thought they did a pretty good job. I don't think they were horrendous by any stretch of the imagination. But, yeah, maybe their promo's maybe a little cookie cutter, but I like the way they set up that the next feud is going to be with the Midnight Express, you know, you figure, look at how many tag teams. I mean,
it's so great. So good.
Just think of just, you got the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, and the Russians. Just start with those four. And then you have the Andersons, who are the national tag. I mean, it's just amazing. They had so many tag teams and so many good tag teams that you can have, you know, two sets of belts, you know, tag team belts. You know, you could have a stepping stone to the world championship. Although, to me, you know, it was like 1 and 1A with when the Andersons had the national tag team titles at this point.
Yeah, I kind of wish it was flip flopped. I want the Andersons with the world tag and Rock and Roll as the national, but that never happened, unfortunately. So the one thing I'll also add, if you did a drinking game to the amount of times the Rock and Roll Express said the word brother, you would probably be dead from all the alcohol you consume, because there's a lot of brothers in this promo. Brother, 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 brother. But yeah, anyway, the crowd's super hot for them. So, Colin, what did you think of this interview with the Rock and Rolls?
I thought it was all right. I think when we had the Rock and Roll Express before, I think we accused them of their promos just going round and round and round. At least this one had a point to it, and it was sort of they got there. I think again this was another one that they had squeezed out all the points they wanted to make within if they were given 2 minutes, they squeezed all their points out within about a minute and a half, and Ricky had to just vamp for the last half a minute. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't. I'm not going to complain too much about it, especially when he did say that. And we're talking about you, Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express. I'm not going to lie, I did get a funny feeling around the waist area when they were talking about that, because I know what's going to come there. I was just get that straight in my veins. So yeah, I mean, I think this was the problem that I was talking about earlier on, where you're talking about all of the different teams that they've got in the promotion. It's just, as you said, it was staggering. The talent that they've got, they could probably afford. They could easily have had a third set of tag titles, and you wouldn't think they'd overdone it. Just amazing. The talent they've got. So, I thought it was perfectly fine.
And the one last thing I will say is, at the end, Tony's just babbling, and the Rock and Roll Express are just standing there awkwardly looking at the camera. So if you watch this interview, wait till the end and just watch it then stare at the camera, because they really don't know what to do. It felt really, really awkward. So I thought that was pretty funny too. All right, so we're going to close out December 14th with a match. So we had the last episode, we had the six-man tag. This one we have a Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title match with Shaska Watley, who has been on the show before, been kind of what I would call a jobber main eventer. And they're trying to pick him up a little bit. As we had in 86, we'll see a lot of Shaska. And he's taking on Crusher Khrushchev. And again, I won't go line by line. This match is 15 minutes. A lot of arm drags. And one thing I will say, Crusher is not the most talented of the Russians, obviously. So him being a singles champion kind of gives us a little bit of an opportunity for this belt, I think, in terms of match quality. I will tell you what I did like. There's a lot of arm work, a lot of arm drags. But what I do like is Shaska's arm work when he does his arm drags, and the visual of him getting Big Crusher up in those and kind of tossing him around on the arm drags, I thought was pretty cool. At one point, Shaska does a dive outside, which I thought was pretty good as well. There was a botched segment here where I guess they were going for a sunset flip or a backdrop, and Shaska, I guess Crusher Khrushchev, turned it into a hot shot. So I thought he recovered it pretty good, but it was definitely a botched situation there. The end of the match comes when Watley goes for a pin, he goes after Ivan when Ivan interferes to get Shaska's get him off of Khrushchev, and Shastley turns around to go after Ivan, and he gets a sickle for the three. And again, I believe Tommy Young was the ref in this again. So again, a face loses on a dumb shit referee. They just book him to look really, really stupid. But second half of the match I thought was pretty damn good. I liked the Shaska work. Khrushchev, a lot of opportunity with him. I actually went 2 stars. It was solid, but nothing great. But I definitely look forward to seeing more Shaska after this match. So, Dr. G, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Shasko Watley was pretty much the MVP of the match. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to see how he took on, the bigger Crusher Khrushchev. I think Crusher Khrushchev was better in the tag team situation than in a singles match, and it showed some of his weaknesses. Again, just an average match. I went 1.75 stars. Nothing like it wasn't the worst match I ever seen by any stretch of the imagination. We've seen some real clunkers, especially during that, 4 or 5 month period before we got back to this, our regular watches. But, it just, again, just was an average match. Nothing to totally write home about, but nothing to totally kill. I mean, obviously Crusher is the weak link. Well, I want to say he's weaker than Nikita, but still relatively, green at this point. I just think it's just his character kind of stood out more than anything. So it kind of covers up his bad work rate. Obviously Ivan's the best of the three. But I was definitely impressed with Watley. I mean, Watley always put on good matches, even in his jobber matches. He always, he always gave his opponent a run for their money, and then always would lose in the end. He was a good hand. Here's a depth. There we go.
No, actually, he's a good hand in a good way, I think, for me. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. All right. So you went 1.75. Colin, what'd you think?
There were long periods of this match when Watley was on offense that if they were around at the time, you could have put on a gif. It was, arm drag, arm bar, less the man up, arm drag, arm bar. Now, to be fair, you would be mistaken. You could be forgiven if you mistook this as the tryout to show that he could be the power plant's trainer. Because if you've ever watched Tough Enough, what's the first things they learn? Armbar, arm drag, take a bump. You'd be forgiven for thinking that. I can't say it was a bad match per se, because nothing much really happened. I mean, Crusher is probably out of the three the worst of the three Russians, despite Ivan being, pushing 50, and Nikita not even being a year into the business at this point. Somehow Crusher is the worst of the three. It is what it is. It was a solid enough TV match. I went 1.5 on it because nothing really blew me away.
All right, so that'll end our episode number four. This will end the December 14th episode. After the match, it is announced that Jim Crockett comes out and announces next week there's a 6-man tag team title with Manny the Bull Fernandez, Ron Bass, and Ron Garvin versus Buddy Landell, Black Bart, and Thunderfoot. Which you had me. I'd probably be okay if we didn't have Black Bart and Thunderfoot. But that match takes a significant twist in terms of what happens on December 21st, and we will cover that right after this break. Stay tuned.
Close your eyes, make a wish, and blow out the candle light. For tonight is just your night, we're gonna celebrate. All through the night,
pour the wine, light the fire. Girl, your wish is my command.
I submit to your demands. I will.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling, welcome to the second half of NWA Crock and Roll number 25. our first part of December 85. So we've talked about December 7th and December 14th, 1985. Now we're going to talk about the December 21st episode. So we're going to open this one up with Tully and another Tully interview. And Tully's again out in a Red Gym sweatshirt. Tony says, I think you are more dangerous without a belt than with one because we have seen you lose a title and get back up before Tully. And Tully basically says, I'm a tremendous wrestler. I'm at the apex of my career. Only way to achieve monetary gain, and that's what everybody does in the sport, is for the money. And you got to have one of those prestigious belts around your waist to do it, which I thought was a really great sell. He talks about, I put prestige on that belt. And then Baby Doll and I walk out of Greensboro Coliseum, I'll have the world TV title around my waist. So I like how he talked about the U.S. title. Now he's talking about his role in the TV title tournament, which obviously is a belt that he's held a long time, that he has a lot of prestige. Baby Doll bumps in and goes, that's right, Tully. I need a world title or a TV title or a U.S. title because I am very expensive. And Tully says, you are my perfect 10, bought and paid for. I'll worry about taking care of you. All you have to worry about is taking care of me. TA, don't forget the U.S. title will be back around my waist. So, again, I love this promo from Tully coming out. Not, you know, it's kind of like serious business now. He's not in his suit. He's going to get in the grind. He wants his U.S. title back. He's going to go on a TV title match or TV title tournament, walk out of Greensboro with that match because it's prestigious, that belt. And I like to kind of tease at the end with Baby Doll around, well, I have to have a title, you know, and then Tully kind of gives her shit and says, well, you let me worry about taking care of you. You worry about taking care of me. And then they kind of end it. So a lot going on here, maybe a little bit of foreshadowing. So, Colin, what did you think of this promo from Tully?
Another home run from Tully, as you can expect. I completely agree with you that it is very foreshadowing with Baby Doll butting in. It's really the first time that she's sort of gone against Tully as if to say that. You sort of, not necessarily you need me more than I need you, but you need a belt, or I'm not going to stick around. It was very much like, in very different terms, how Sunny was in the mid-90s, where she would just use a team to get a title. Then when that was probably under threat, then she would just manage the next team that was the champion. So she's got no Baby Doll, not necessarily getting any loyalty towards. Deep down, not get very much loyalty towards Tully. It was a very, very good promo. But I can see Tully again, just you know, excellent as ever.
Yep. Dr. G, what'd you think?
I agree with Callum 100%. I mean, Tully just—it's weird. You can see from last week, you know, the previous week to this week, and how he, you know, or was it 2 weeks ago? Now I'm trying to remember when he was sullen. I guess it was the first.
Yeah, It was the first episode where he came out right after he lost the belt. Yeah,
on the 7th. But definitely loved the, you know, the fire. You know, again, you could see he's getting his confidence back, as compared to. You know, a few weeks before that. So, you know, obviously setting things up for the future. And, you know, it's amazing how they keep that feud going, you know, with Magnum, even though, you know, usually a match like that would be the ending of a feud. But those guys just keep it going.
Yep. So really good stuff here from Tully. And we'll see some banger stuff coming out of Tully Blanchard in January. So look forward to that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes, some banger stuff. All right, so then we're going to go to JJ. So this is kind of a weird promo. Again, maybe a little foreshadowing because January is a big month of something that might happen in January. He comes out. His head's all bandaged up in his ugly yellow tux. Tony introduces him as the manager of champions of the national champion, Buddy Landel. JJ says, basically he talks about how he's taken someone like Buddy Landel and taken him to the national title. But nobody's really talking about it because all everyone's talking about is the world TV title and Dusty Rhodes, and kind of like putting him off a little bit in terms of what he's actually accomplished and what Buddy Landell has accomplished. And I thought, like, JJ, like he mentioned, a very low key, just felt really almost humiliated. He's like, I'm not going to tolerate it. I feel like I'm mentioned in passing. Very low key, he says, from now on, I'm going to be sitting back at the monitor and listening to every word you say. And he's giving Tony shit for underselling him. And I don't think for the rest of this program, you should mention that TV title tournament. If you want to talk about something important, talk about the national belt, Buddy Landell, and talk about me. So really weird. But he's just upset that no one's recognizing that what he's done with Buddy Landell. And he's really pissed off everyone's paying attention to the TV title tournament. So, Dr. G, what did you think about this?
You know, just a classic JJ, you know, interview. Now, he really, really, I think he was put with Landell to really try to put him over. I don't know what Landell's standing was at that time, because we know he kind of did himself in. But I know they were trying to kind of make him like a Ric Flair kind of like knockoff, but obviously he didn't have the talking skills. I mean, he was okay in the ring. I mean, he wasn't horrendous by any stretch of the imagination, but they put him with JJ, and JJ really seems to be trying to put him over big time in this interview, but I don't know if he really did a good job at it. I mean, JJ's a great talker, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. It was kind of it's kind of all over the place. Like, I didn't he didn't sell me, let's put it that way. If that's yeah. Do you agree? Like, you felt like, you know, it was just kind of something like random, like, okay, we're not getting any respect here. Like, they looked like they were really trying hard to put over Buddy Landell.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, on our last episode, they announced the six-man tag match tonight, that Buddy Landell would be here. I got a spoiler for you. Buddy Landell's not here, and we won't see Buddy Landell again on this podcast. So, hint, hint, more to come on what happens with that. So, to your point,
okay. I guess... So this is... I'm trying to, you know, remember the timeline. So, this is... starting to get to the time, obviously, when, you know, Landell started falling out of favor in the office.
I think at this point, Buddy's still the champion, and he's just not here tonight. And they haven't really solved for what's happening with him, and that's why they still keep him relevant in this promo with JJ. I think that's what they did. At least that's my perspective. Colin, what did you think of this interview? It's really, really strange interview, I thought.
It was a strange interview in sort of... you know, and the content of it, however, and the context of it, however, this promo shows the excellence of one James J. Dillon, because he by trying to elevate the national championship by saying you should be talking more about Buddy Landell and the National Heavyweight Championship, he makes the World TV Championship sound like the most important thing in the world. Because it was expertly done. He goes, oh, everyone's talking about it. And then just goes through the history of the TV Championship, going, Dusty Rhodes won it and it elevated it. And then Arn Anderson put more views on it, and he elevated it that bit more. And it just made the TV Championship sound like the most important thing, maybe by the heavyweight championship, the world championship, sorry. So I thought that in itself was very, very well done. And that's something that's been a recurring theme through a lot of the timeline stuff we've watched, that whilst trying to put themselves or the man on JJ Dillon's case, the guy that he's managing over, they always seem to big up everything else. I think back to Flair talking about how he's got all these challengers and he's going to beat them all, but then he was elevating, like, he would describe Magnum TA as how he was going to beat Magnum TA, but in a sense tell you everything good about Magnum TA. And it was very much like that with JJ here. He was telling you how good the TV Championship was whilst also trying to slight it. So I thought it was very, very well done. But as you say, they're trying to keep Landell. I guess how often is it you see even when Paul Jones was in the middle of his feud, never-ending feud with Jimmy Valiant, he would always come out with the Barbarian or Abdullah the Butcher. It's not often you see a manager come out without his guys. The only other person I've really seen do it is Cornette, but that's because the Midnight Express are generally in the ring just waiting to have a match. So, yeah, very strange that Landell wasn't out with him, but as you say, there's probably more reason for that than they're letting on the TV.
Yeah, so I think they're in that spot where they really don't know what's happening with Landell, and it's just to keep him relevant. But yeah, I really enjoyed this promo for JJ, and like I said, JJ really goes some places in January. January, there's some crazy shit that happens with JJ and Tully too. So looking forward to talking about that. All right, guys. So now we're gonna go into our real main event for me. This whole entire show, because the next set of segments are absolutely tremendous. So the first one we have, this is setting up something between Ric Flair and someone that I have said is one of my favorite all-time underrated wrestlers that Dr. G calls a good hand. Blasphemy, to me. I love Ron Garvin. And it's kind of like early. You know what's interesting? I didn't bring this up when we were talking about the Rock and Roll Express. So the Midnight Express, you know, lost at Starrcade 85 to Valiant and Atlanta Lively, who was Garvin, right? So now they're challenging for the tag team title. So maybe they had to pay their dues and lose the Valiant and Garvin. Well, maybe Garvin had to pay some dues to dress up as a woman for him to get what's going to happen here with Flair over the next 2 weeks. But this next set of stuff is just fantastic. So we'll jump right into it. So first, there's a Flair promo, kind of doing what he does best, comes out talking about he's the best looking man alive, the best dressed. He's the world champion. He's a modern-day sex symbol. They flash to women in the audience who are just swooning over him. It's so great. He talks about Jim Crockett Promotions being the greatest promotion of all time. And he's put together this great Super Station Championship Series that's brought the best of pro wrestling in TBS. And he said he sat in Ted Turner's office on many occasions and had took Ted look him in the eye and say, Jim Crockett, what's happening to wrestling, the promotion and the world? And then he goes into Dusty Rhodes talking about how he's trying to convince himself he's the man. And Dusty gets another shot at the world title on Christmas Day to get another opportunity, which, you know, sells that for Atlanta. Obviously, this is taped in Atlanta. And he just says one more thing to say. He says, he says, darling, I like that look. I am no Scrooge. Many times I have been called a big spender. He pulls out a bunch of cash, and here's how it goes. He says, Tony tries not to laugh. He goes, $300 for Tony and his wife to go out to dinner, $200 for TA to go buy some new clothes. When you dress like Magnum, there's a whole bunch you got to get fixed up. And then he goes into DA at Dusty Rhodes again to buy a ticket out of Atlanta, Georgia. So first class anywhere, because when I'm done with Dusty Rhodes, I will say Slick Rick is forever. And then he says, go get him, guy. And he goes, woo, woo, and walks away from the camera. So Flair was really, really feeling himself here. Sold a rematch with Dusty. Giving out money to Tony. Giving out money to Magnum. This was fantastic. So that's promo number one. So before we jump into the next set, Dr. G, what did you think of this Flair promo? This was fabulous.
This is classic. Tony's face was priceless. When he gave him the money, and he's like looking at him, okay, I'm gonna put this in my pocket, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, just good stuff, you know, just the music. And you know what, Flair was just always on. And like I said, you know, when we were watching other stuff from around the you know, other territories, you know before they were in Crockett, you know, all the different themes we did, Flair's interviews were just not, and they were good, but they weren't like they were on World Championship Wrestling or on Crockett. He was just totally on. He you could tell he just looked like he was having a good time. And you know, I think he loved to also like play around with the announcers every so often, because, you know, he was friendly with them, obviously, off the air. So he just have some fun with them, and just their reactions, especially Tony was awesome. And he kind of reminded me of Mean Gene, you know, just had the, you know, the facial expressions, just sold it all. So just another great solid promo by the Mother Nature boy.
Yeah. Colin, what did you think?
Well, this one, after the week the weekend that we had just passed, now for those for the time you hear this, we're recording this. Peep behind the curtain, we're recording this on the Tuesday after All Out. So the one thing, the one takeaway that everyone I think has been having is how much fun these guys look as if they're having when they're in front of the camera. That's what the first thing that jumped out to me, because as you were saying that, and you said as well, Sean, that Tony is standing there just living his best life. He's just a fan that's just happens to be holding the microphone for Ric Flair. He's absolutely loving it. And as you say, he's grinning from ear to ear. He's trying not to laugh at all of Flair's antics. And you just get the impression that everybody there is loving what they're doing. Flair on this one is just, he's out of control. It's fantastic. The spreading himself too thin, but if Ric Flair's told he's going to be there, he's going to, when Ric Flair's going to be there, St. Nick is going to, he's going to have him in your stocking. I just thought, it's brilliant stuff again from him, and you could say it's typical Flair, but when Ric Flair's worst promos are a 9 out of 10, then typical Flair, just give me that every day of the week.
Yeah, so, yeah, really good stuff. And this sets up our next set of promos, which this next promo, it's actually one promo, but it's one hell of a segment here. So we're going to Flair, and Tony is standing. Well, first off, Tony's standing outside the ring, says the Challenge Series concludes next week. And says, what a series this has been. Jim Crockett comes out. Jim Crockett comes out and says, next week will be our final match, and it will be for the U.S. title, and we are getting Magnum TA versus Ole Anderson for the U.S. title next week. So really big main event, which I'm excited to talk about on our next episode. Ron Garvin is standing next to Tony at the time after a match he had just had, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, the final match we'll talk about tonight. Flair comes out. And he goes, I want the world to see it just in case to not hear what I said earlier. We had, he basically goes into talking about being a number one wrestling promotion to Jim Crockett, congratulates him. He yells at someone in the crowd to shut up. I'm not taking her home tonight whoever he's talking to, which is one of his famous lines. He talks about the greatest sequence of wrestling matches ever on the Challenge Series. Just want to say I'm very disappointed that in all the arrangements, we could not have found an opponent suitable enough for Ric Flair in that series to get beat by me on nationwide TV maybe next year. Congratulates Mr. Crockett and shakes his hand. Jim Crockett, of course, is stone-faced and just doesn't say anything. Tony says, Ric Flair, Ron Garvin is also here. Flair says, Ron Garvin is here on my interview time. Maybe you aren't aware of the fact that when I walk out here, anyone standing here? He says, anyone standing here, exit. And he points at Garvin. Garvin laughs and says, Flair goes, it's one known fact when I walk out here, anyone else just disappears. Ron Garvin goes, Ric Flair, let me tell you, the sun don't shine just for you. The rest of the world gets some of it too, but you like it to wrestle on TV, the superstation. Flair says, I love to wrestle on TV. People stay up all day long to see me wrestle on TV. Ron Garvin goes, you run away from Dusty Rhodes, TA. I've been chasing you around the world, can't ever get you, but I found you today. You want to wrestle me? I'll wrestle you plain and simple. You want to put your reputation in career? And Flair goes, you want to put your reputation and a career on the line? You want to wrestle me? Wrestle Ric Flair? Garvin says, put your belt where your mouth is. You probably don't have any money anyway because you spend it all. Put the belt up. And then Flair goes in. Flair just, they go back and forth. The final line is an all-time classic. He says, Ric Flair, we have a date. I guess they're gonna wrestle next week. Ric Flair, we have a date, but we ain't gonna be making love. We're gonna be wrestling. So that's promo number one. Then we get another Flair promo. He says, Tony, I am such a generous person. In the past 2 weeks, my personal secretary has promised 8,000 different women out of 17,000 personal letters that I got that I'll be in their stocking Christmas morning. The women go crazy. He goes, I've been known to spread myself a little thin, but girls, if I tell you I'm going to be there, you run downstairs because old Saint Nick won't let you down. The women are just going nuts. He says, get back to those girls looking at me. Serious level. I get the impression Ron Garvin thinks I'm a little bit afraid of him. Slick Rick the Champ, Space Mountain, Garvin, I'm going to beat you up so bad. Compare you to Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes came out here low key tonight, very serious. And he talks about a Dusty Rhodes promo we saw earlier tonight. The gist of this is we have Ric Flair and Ron Garvin in addition to Magnum TA and Ole Anderson for the U.S. title. So we have two big title matches to end the year on December 28th of World Championship Wrestling. Two fantastic promos, great setup using a championship series. Ric Flair, as people would say, feeling his shit. And Ron Garvin calling him out on his shit, calling him a poor man with no money. And we aren't going to make love, we're going to wrestle. Colin, what did you think of these two segments? I thought they were absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, they were. Again, when I saw that Mr. Charisma himself, Jim Crockett, came out to announce the US title match for the 28th, again, that strange feeling down below came back again, completely. This is going to be wonderful. Flair again is just on it. Garvin is not awful as an interview, but he's standing next to Ric Flair. It's patently obvious that he's not excellent, but he does have some good lines on it. I popped when he said, "You probably don't have any money. You've probably spent it all."
Which is a very good line because it's true, right?
Yeah, I mean it's like he's seen into the future. We're not going to make love. We're going to wrestle. But he also said there's no frills with Ron Garvin. And I thought, do you know what? That's right. He's just a guy who is going to, you know, stretch you into ways that the human body shouldn't be stretched, and he's going to knock you out. So you know, does it matter if he's not? It almost explains why he's not Ric Flair with a microphone in his hand, because he doesn't need to be. He's, again, no frills about him. He's not an entertainer. He is a professional wrestler. That was absolutely fine. And Flair at the end, just, you know, excellent again. As I said, the I'll be in your stocking on Christmas morning. I've been known to spread myself thin, but run downstairs and I'll be there for you. So,
that was just tremendous. Like the stocking thing and the stuff. Letters, so great.
I love it how he's got more than one secretary as well. He's like my personal secretaries. I'm like, only Ric Flair has more than one secretary. Space Mountain and all that sort of thing. But and correct me if I'm wrong, but I could be wrong, but is this the first time he's referred to himself as Space Mountain?
I think he said Space Mountain at least once or twice.
Has he said? I couldn't remember. Yeah. Obviously, because thinking back now, was it maybe an episode with Logan? And Logan had pointed out that he'd mentioned Space Mountain, but he's not done a hell of a lot. But yeah, I mean, it's just excellent stuff. Flair is absolutely on fire, and I feel that even when we started this, because you had the David Crockett angle and with the Russians in it, you didn't get the full Nature Boy as we know him now. But now that the whole Nikita stuff's out of the way, he's turned that dial up to 11. And he is the Nature Boy Ric Flair, as we all know and love him. And it is just, it's a home run every time.
Yeah, he's full on feeling himself now. We're out of that mid-Atlantic, I'm a face, in Georgia, I'm a heel. He's full on Ric Flair at this point, and I absolutely hear for it and love it. Dr. G, what did you think?
Yeah, he definitely is, you know,
full on Ric Flair, you know, like there's no this tweener type of thing anymore. Now he's coming out. You know, another guy I'm gaining more respect for in all this is Ron Garvin.
I've been trying to tell you this, Mister. He's a good hand.
No, you know, Ron Garvin, I mean, was always, you know, always a rough and tough wrestler. I was never really very critical of him. Now, the Podfather is. I used to have these arguments with him all the time. He did not like Ron Garvin for a long time. I think he's coming around on him a little
bit. Yeah, he started liking him watching him on the Mothership when he was watching him in the WWF stuff because he had some good matches there. But, yeah, I mean, Ron Garvin is a – should I say – Ron Garvin is a Southern treasure. I'll leave it at that. Southern Crockett treasure.
Well, you know, he was – I mean, I listened to him talk in some promos. I mean,
he's not a promo guy.
He's not a promo guy, but he's kind of real, if you want to put it that way. Like he just—he's
a common man. He's the less amplified Dusty Rhodes, is what he is. Like he's the anti Dusty Rhodes common man, I guess I would put it.
Exactly. He just—he kind of just tells you how he feels and what he's going to do, and usually could back it up. And you know, I forgot how good these guys worked together, Flair and Garvin. I mean, I thought that their back and forth was pretty good. And Flair is just totally on it. I mean, he's really, really coming into his own here. Not that he wasn't already, but, you know, like he's hitting his peak. Let's put it this way. Yeah, this is, you know, over the next year or so, you're going to see probably the best we probably have ever seen of Ric Flair.
Yep.
You know, I know he's had some other good years, but I think this 85, 86 period of time is his best years, to be honest.
Yep. So I'm excited for our next episode where we get to talk about those two big main events, a U.S. title, world title match. But to close, yeah, so Ric Flair, Ron Garvin. Ron Garvin, one of my all-time hidden gem favorites. He doesn't do a lot of talking, but when he gets in the ring, he beats the shit out of people, and I can't wait to see him fight Flair next week. So really, really great stuff for him coming out of Starrcade. A big win for him to come out of that with a world title match, and obviously the Midnight Express getting out of that Jimmy Valiant stuff and heading in Rock and Roll. There's some good stuff ahead, obviously, on their end too. All right, so we're gonna close it with a match. It's Thunderfoot and Black Bart versus the Bull and Garvin. So here's what happened. So Landell obviously isn't here, so you can see where this is headed. So obviously they turn it into a tag team match versus a six-man tag. So this match, guys, isn't that great. It's Thunderfoot is a wrestler called Joel Dietnunner in mask. His gimmick is he has a foot made of thunder, and his big gimmick is he loads his boot up to knock people out so he could win a match. This is just a whole lot of Bull and a whole lot of Garvin getting their shit in against Bart and Thunderfoot. The ending comes at the end. Garvin getting a lot of stretching. There's a lot of holds, and Garvin just beating the shit out of people with sometimes Bull's getting in on his stuff. But at the end of the day, Thunderfoot loads his foot. Looks like he's loading it again. It nails Bull, but Bull really no-sells it, which was really weird. And Bull pulls Thunderfoot into the corner. And while he's got Thunderfoot in the headlock, he tags Garvin, and Garvin just hits a nowhere out of nowhere top rope sunset flip for a very anticlimactic three, very blah match. Bart is extremely boring. Thunderfoot's terrible. I love Garvin and I love Bull. I went 1.25 stars just to give it kind of a nice rub for Garvin and for the Bull. But yeah, not a great match here, Colin, to end our show tonight. What'd you think?
No. We have watched a lot of matches from Saturday night now, and it's very obvious that the people that go to those shows will pop for anything. Nine times out of ten, it's because they're given something to pop for. The Black Bart effect is in full flow here because they were given nothing. I mean, Black Bart and Thunderfoot, I cannot think of a worse team that they could have put out. And I feel bad for, because we have seen I feel bad for Garvin. I feel bad for Manny, because they have shown time and again that they are excellent. And we've loved a lot of the stuff that they've been involved in. But Black Bart just sucks the life out of anything he's involved in. I'm sorry to say, Sean, because I know that Garvin's your guy, but this was not good at all. And there was nothing that Garvin or Bill could do to salvage it. I did like the finish. I thought the top rope sunset flip was good.
Bull no selling Thunderfoot at all, and just grab it. Like, it was a really wonky ending. Like, they weren't giving Thunderfoot anything, really.
I wouldn't have given him anything either. Flash knockoff. He's a Flash / Shawn Michaels knockoff.
The whole foot, the foot tapping. Sweet chin, yeah, Thunderfoot. Yes.
Yeah. And that's where the comparison to Shawn Michaels begins and ends. No, this was not good at all. I think if I'm being generous, I'll go one star on it. Didn't enjoy it at all.
All right, Dr. G, I assume you're going to follow suit on that match in terms of how you feel about it.
I went one star. Pretty much agree with everything Callum was saying. Just not good. I mean, Black Bart and Thunderfoot. Now, Thunderfoot, I believe, was Joel Deaton, who wrestled, I think, in GWF. I remember back, in those days, the ESPN days, and I don't think he really had much of a career. You just put two guys like that together, and even though you had, Garvin and the Raging Bull, there was just nothing there. And I thought the ending was anticlimactic, maybe just to get it over with.
Yeah, I think it was just like let's go home. This match.
Let's just go home now. Yeah. No, you know what? Why don't we cut our losses here and just move on? The match didn't do much for me. It wasn't the worst match I've ever seen, but definitely not as good as the six man match, which I said earlier.
Well, here's the good news. So that brings us to the end of part one, and we didn't have to watch a single damn thing with Wahoo McDaniel or Jimmy Valiant tonight or in a match. So we have a big win tonight. So, yeah, so guys, really great first half of December 85. But on our next episode, I just want to share a couple things that are coming up. We will cover two things. We will cover December 28th. We have some great promos, but the meat and potatoes of it, we have some really great matches coming on the next episode. So we'll see the follow-up. We'll talk about Ole versus Magnum for the U.S. title. We'll talk about Flair versus Garvin for the world title. From Worldwide, also on 12/28, we have a match that has the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, and America's team versus Ric Flair and the Andersons that we'll talk about. So a really big six-man there. And then what I have uncovered on the great YouTube on December 29th, 1985, we will talk about the AWA Night of Champions from the Meadowlands. As part of the Pro Wrestling USA card, where we have three big matches. We'll have a U.S. title rematch with Tully versus TA. We'll have a Flair versus Dusty world title match to talk about. And we'll talk about the Russians versus the Warriors. So really match-heavy episode next month with some really big matches. December is stocked. And, again, I thank you guys for joining us for the first half. And the next half is going to be a big banger as well. So before we go, Dr. G, anything you would like to plug or anything you'd like to say about being back in our timeline before you do your plugs?
Well, I'm loving being back in our timeline. The best is yet to come. Let's put it that way. We're really, really hitting our stride now and getting into the thick of things. And I'm looking forward to the next watch, because things will start heating up and coming into focus into January probably a great time in wrestling. So we'll get to that. That's all we'll say about that. But in regards to stuff I want to pump up, obviously the NWA Saturday special drops every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. We had some great pay-per-views, Callum, great job with the Twitch. I'm not sure. I know that you had a great Twitch this past weekend for AEW, but I know that the NWA was probably one of the most watched Twitches in regards to Twitch as well as the YouTube in the history of Place to Be Nation. But I want to thank you for hosting that and doing a great job. We had a real fun time and a great NWA weekend. And things are going to come into focus a little bit. I was railing on last week's Power. It wasn't that great, but Sean got to watch it before we started tonight recording, and you said that I'll be much happier. So I haven't watched it yet, so I'm looking forward to it, and we'll break it down this Saturday on the Saturday special.
Excellent. So listen to 85 Crockett NWA, and then listen to current day NWA on the Saturday special. Colin, what would you like to plug?
Every month, myself, Rory and Ben will get together to record the Special Relations podcast. The last one we did at the time of recording was episode number 21. After a brief hiatus, we were back and in full swing again. For the most part, we discussed the Kevin Nash interview with Stone Cold, amongst other things. This past weekend recorded an episode of the Evolution podcast with Andy Atherton. We covered Shawn Michaels on that one, so that was a fun discussion about that. Dr. G said, I run the Twitch and YouTube pages for the Place to Be Nation. The NWA weekend that we had last weekend, and in particular NWA 73, was the most watched broadcast we ever had between Twitch and YouTube. It was the most successful weekend we've had on them. So thank you to both of you for coming on them. As Sean, as you well know, it's quite painful to hear me talking to myself for the first start. So it's greatly appreciated that both you took time out of your weekends to do that with me. So thank you very much. We also had five Twitch live watches in 3 weeks. It all started with Rampage for the small thing of CM Punk's return to wrestling after 7 years, and it finished with All Out last week. All Out itself was the most watched we've ever had on Twitch on the night, which is excellent. So to anyone that's listening that listened into them, again, just thank you very much. It is greatly appreciated. And for those who haven't watched but want to watch the show with their alternative commentary, just search Place to Be Nation, all one word, on YouTube. All of our live watches are on there. So please follow, subscribe, like, whatever the terminology is, on your particular chosen platform. And you'll just be kept up to date with anything that when we go live for streams or any new videos that drop on YouTube, you'll get notified of that. But again, just thank you very much to everyone involved in the Twitches and on the Twitch streams in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Colin does the Lord's work on those Twitch streams. I made 4 out of 5 of them, and the one that I really should have been on and I didn't make. And I'm sad that I made the SummerSlam one and I missed the AEW one. That's what I'll say to that. But the NWA Twitch feeds were great. The Rampage one was great. They were all really good, and it's good to hear different people come in. And Colm is kind of the centerpiece is on for the whole run, and being up late at night and having to do those US pay-per-views. And I didn't even know you recorded Evolution, so man, you've been busy. So Colm McDougal representing really well here. So as for me, you can find me on Twitter at NWA Crock and Roll. You can find me on numerous podcasts on this feed, Highway to the Impact Zone, YouTube Roulette, on a North South feed. You can find me doing monthly Impact pay-per-view shows, reviews with Matt Souza, and on the Pop feed, you can find me doing Battlestar in the 25th Century with Scott Shiflett and Pop Goes to the Couch. And I will have a couple special appearances coming up. I do have a senior video coming up, and I will have an appearance coming up on the Jenny Position doing Have You Heard About Pluto? So a lot of good stuff across the quad of pods. Gentlemen, I am thankful. Thank you for joining me tonight. It's very exciting to be back and talk about the timeline and the stuff that we love. And in part two, Jacob Williams will join us. He'll give us his thoughts on the first half, and then we could jump right into December 28th, World Championship Wrestling, and the AWA card on the 29th. So good stuff, guys, and we will see you on the next episode of NWA Crock and Roll.